Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 12, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, ADM is building a new soy product facility in Brazil. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason looks forward with ag economist Daryl Good to key USDA end-of-the-month reports. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 747 and three quarters, up 18 and a quarter. July, 742, up 21. Soft May wheat, the Chicago variety, which before Kansas City moved over, 683 and three quarters, up 24 and three quarters in July, 688 and a quarter, up 24. March corn, 481 and a quarter, up 6 and a quarter. July, 492, up 5. December, 486 and a quarter, up 5. March soybeans, 1381 and three quarters, down 29 and three quarters. July, 1368 and a half, down 22 and three quarters. November, 1176 and a quarter, down 13 and a quarter. March soybean meal, $448.30, down $4. March soybean oil, $43.20, down $31. And here are some last trades on the livestock side. April live cattle, $143.92 and a half, up 70. March feeders, $173.97 and a half, up 5. And April lean hogs, $116.70, and they are down 40. And those are your last trades and settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says a good mix of rain and sunshine will occur in Argentina over the next 2 weeks. Rain is most likely Thursday into Friday with good coverage and rain totals of 15-tenths to almost 7-tenths of an inch, most likely in key crop areas. Argentina temperatures will be seasonably warm during the coming week with highs in the 70s and 80s. Meanwhile, northeastern Brazil weather will be the driest the remainder of this week into early next week with little to no rain from portions of Minas Gerais and Espírito Santo de Bahia, where high pressure aloft is expected to suppress rainfall. Rain will fall frequently in western and southern Brazil during the coming week, with significant relief from dryness likely in Paraguay into late this weekend and early next week. Temperatures in Brazil over the coming week will be seasonable, with many highs in the 80s and lower 90s. Meanwhile, cold air will follow the U.S. storm in the Midwest and southeastern states tonight and again Thursday night. Freezes are likely in the Carolinas, northern Georgia, and Virginia, with some temporary damage to winter crops. A second surge of bitter cold is expected to move through the northeastern U.S. plains and northern Midwest Friday night into the weekend. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural markets is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I guess we would be remiss if we didn't start with the soybeans, because they have moved quite a bit in the last couple of trading days. In fact, have hit some Fibonacci numbers along the way as well.
Well, there's no question about it. You know, that I'm certain there's a lot of people out there who are very disappointed in the way the beans have reacted. I think you have to take into account there are a lot of things. You know, in the earlier show we talked a bit about China and the impact, you know, the cancellations that they've done down in Brazil, which is really shaking the trade, giving the perception that they may cancel on our end. Reality is that, you know, there's about 40 million bushels of unshipped sales on the books that China could cancel. Even if they did that right now, we'd still be 60 million over what the USDA estimate is, you know. So it's going to be a situation where people are going to be looking to the end of the month report. If you look at May beans, you know, we need to hold that 1385 area. That's an extremely strong point. That is a 200-day moving average. You look at November beans, we almost put in a double bottom today, which I thought was good. You know, and just like you mentioned, we blew through some of the Fibonacci. So, you know, we've got some support on one side, and on the opposite side, you know, we have some technical issues that I believe we're going to probably work out during the week this week. The reality is you can't expect to have a market go up the way we have and not come down somewhat. The other part of it, too, is larger acres. You know, everybody believes that we will probably expand bean acres, and that's part of what's supporting wheat, too, with the idea that we probably will end up with less wheat as we go down the road.
I do want to touch on corn as well, but before I do that, I think a few things to look at fundamentally from an outside market perspective first, and the first one comes from CME, which is proposing variable daily limits in grains, and this would be one of the last places where this hasn't been done.
Well, that's absolutely the truth. In fact, I attended a meeting, Dave, when CME proposed moving the limits on corn to 40 cents, and there was just an immense amount of talk at that time as to why we were not going to variable limits, because, you know, if you look at a 40-cent limit like we have right now on $4 corn is 5%, you know, is 10% of the value. It's only 5% of the value on an $8 bushel of corn. How does that equate?
Mm-hmm.
And so this will be interesting to see if they do it. They're talking about doing it using a rolling six-month average for the contract. 6 months is a fairly long period of time. I would think that, you know, in the majority of our other commodities, you're looking at quarterly in most cases, but I think 6 months is a great place to start, primarily because you have to be able to explain to a client why the limit is different. And so when you've got an industry like we've had with fixed limits for such a long time, I'm really happy to see this coming forth.
The other moving part of note today comes out of China, where their central bank is offering up a bunch of new reforms.
Well, they certainly are. You know, they're talking about the fact that in 2 years we could actually see the yuan, you know, the Chinese currency, float just like the dollar. Now, that's really very huge, and that's something that U.S. and a lot of other countries have been asking them to do. Why? Because if you allow the yuan to float, it basically reduces the cheap goods that come out of that country from businesses that basically have been getting artificially lower borrowing rates than they should have. The banks now have to compete for savings from the individuals. That could bring some foreign capital into China. And I thought it was interesting, the statement that they made. They said, true power comes from a nation's ability to harness innovation that drives global competition. Sounds very democratic, doesn't it?
It does. The other moving part from a foreign country is out of Russia, where we're still trying to figure out all the ramifications of what's going on in the Ukraine.
That isn't the truth. You know, it definitely is always in the background. Volatility is going to hang around because of it. And I think when you look at the corn market especially, and the wheat market too, they're being pushed around because of the perception of how much exports we may or may not gain if they actually escalate, and or whether this is going to interfere with their, you know, their planting, because they're going to be heading into planting corn in not too long. In fact, a Ukrainian farmer tweeted to Todd, I believe it was about a week ago, we've been asked to list our trucks that could be mobilized for military use.
Mm.
I think that's quite something when you think about our situation. You know, I don't think in generally as a farmer we'd even think about somebody asking us about our trucks and to be able to use them for military use. So that whole Ukrainian situation, reality is the Crimea area, which is where the primary part of it is, it only represents 13% of all of the exports that go out of that country. And they actually go out of Odessa, which is at the southern area. So where all of the action's been going on has been at the port where the military or where the Navy is located, you know. And so at this point in time, it's a big question as to whether or not it's going to cause a problem. But we certainly can't count it out. And if you're a risk manager, it has to be a part of your thinking. There's no two ways about it.
So now we turn our attention then to the corn market, and we say thank you, wheat, for some of corn's strength today. But also you look at the charts and you realize that we've been trying to break down the corn market on a December basis at 475 for the last recessions and could not get that done, and so corn is now on the upside again.
Oh, there's no question. And, you know, a big moving average, of course, that we always watch is the 10-day moving average. And so that, you know, that 480 area is really, really important. I do candlesticks from a technical standpoint. Today we had a long wick to the bottom end, very small wick at the top end. What does that say? It says that the market probed for lower, you know, probed mm-hmm. to see if there was more selling and then didn't find it and ended up, you know, closing close to the top. And, you know, that's good. So when you look at that market, that 480 number is really important to us and not closing below it. So I'm glad to see that we have wheat giving us as much support as we do. And we are now beyond, though. The traditional funds had held a record short position in wheat. They are now even on wheat. So anything that happens from here on out, if they continue to buy wheat, now you know, we have new buyers coming into the market. That's really good. But if you actually look at the rally that we've seen that's gone on in wheat, in the period of time in March where we rallied about $1.35, I believe it was, on wheat, we rallied maybe 90 cents on corn. So anybody, I had someone ask me today, do you think corn can rally as much as wheat? And I really can't say that I believe that in old crop corn right now, just because we still have the acreage report and the grain stocks report coming.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. She is in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Archer Daniels Midland Company today announced plans to construct a soy protein production complex in Campo Grande, Mato Grosso do Sul. The $250 million complex, which will be located next to ADM's existing soybean processing facility, will manufacture a range of functional protein concentrates to complement ADM's current North American production. These ingredients will give ADM's South American customers a variety of options to add protein to various food and beverage products. About 80 ADM employees will be based at the new complex once it is complete. Construction is expected to begin in the third quarter. China's top central banker put the country on course to free up interest rates on bank deposits within 2 years, a move that would force the nation's lenders to compete for customers by offering the best terms. Officials say they hope the change will put more money in the pockets of ordinary Chinese savers, making the banks evaluate risks more carefully and direct lending to privately owned firms that complain of China's largest bank ignoring them. Currently, the People's Bank of China maintains a cap on the rate banks can pay depositors, a system that has left Chinese households poorly compensated because deposit rates often fall short of the rate of inflation. China's gradual relaxing of rates is part of a broader liberalization of its economic policies, which has included giving the market a greater say in valuing the China's currency and permitting more investment in China by foreigners. Canada plans to phase out the use of sow stalls by using a new code of practice that mirrors rules already in place in the European Union. The revised code includes a commitment to adopt loose housing for sows and gilts in all new facilities built or renovated after July 1st of this year. To allow the industry time to adapt, existing Canadian facilities have been given until July 1st of 2024 to make the switch. After that date, all producers will have to comply with the requirement not to keep sows in individual stalls beyond 28 days after the date of last breeding, with an additional 7-day leeway period if needed. The new rules also dictate the size of such stalls so that sows can stand and lie down without touching the sides. Brazilian crop agency CONAB today cut its estimate for the 2013-14 soy harvest because of a drought in some growing areas. Brazilian farmers will grow 85.4 million tons of soy in the current season. In its February report, CONAB had forecast a crop of 90 million tons. CONAB also cut its forecast for the two 2013-14 corn harvests compared with the February report to a total of 75.2 million tons from 75.5 million tons. The worst drought in about 40 years in the states of Sao Paulo and Minas Gerais is harming Brazil's soy, coffee, sugar, and orange crops. U.S. dairy producers will have a new method of protecting their profit margins when an insurance program created by the 2014 Farm Bill begins on September the 1st. The new Dairy Margin Protection Insurance, the Dairy Producer Margin Protection Program, will replace the Milk Income Loss Contract Program. The difference between the two programs is that the new Margin Protection Program will be more based on insurance rather than direct payments from the government. Producers will make a decision once a year, selecting coverage between $4 and $8 per hundredweight based on what they think their feed costs will be in the coming year and how much they are willing to pay for insurance. The maximum amount of milk that can be insured is 24 million pounds per crop year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, Todd Gleason has an interview with University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good on the end of the month USDA acreage and grain stocks reports. The two also take up pricing of old and new crop corn.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I, is in studio to take a look at the marketplace and released the last Monday in March, which I do believe is the 31st day of the month. Not only the grain stocks report on that day, but we also get the acreage number, at least what producers are considering putting into ground.
Absolutely. That will be the first survey-based indication of plantings for 2014. The market always anticipates that number. We know historically that actual plantings can deviate from those intentions, and they do in most years and in both directions, but it's certainly going to be an important benchmark in terms of what farmers are thinking about more corn or less corn acres in 2014. I think there's general agreement that the intentions will be smaller, but the question is, what's the magnitude of that? That's certainly going to be very important for new crop prices.
Do you consider this a time for either old crop or new crop corn that producers should do anything more with what they've got left in the bin or expect to produce for the coming year?
Yeah, I think when you get this kind of strength in the market, I mean, it may be fundamentally based, and I don't think we're really looking at what some people would refer to as a speculative bubble here in corn prices, but we have had a decent run-up in prices, and for those holding old crop inventory. Presumably this is what they've been waiting on, is for some price rally, and now that we've gotten that, I think some sales are certainly warranted. It's always a matter of what percentage do you want to hold now into the spring and summer, potentially weather market for corn, but I think the market has to be rewarded to some extent for the rally that we've had on old crop. New crop, I think benchmarking things to the insurance prices is useful to do. We have a 462 December futures price for crop insurance. The market is now almost 25 cents above that guarantee, so there is some risk now on the downside for new crop corn. And again, for those that haven't done anything to this point, this is kind of what we've been waiting on, is for some kind of rally to start the pricing of 2014 crop. And I think, again, it's hard to be specific about what percentage folks want to do on new crop, but certainly not a bad place to get started.
Darryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Thanks for joining us on short notice, folks at Climbers. Not answering the phone today.
No problem.
I guess the question that a lot of producers would have and is how many folk in total do you feel like took advantage of the futures when they did rally last week and began to start their marketings, and if do you feel as though basis has some positive upside in the next couple of weeks leading into the end of the month reports?
Well, you know, I think that there was a fair amount of selling, more than what we'd seen in, you know, a week or 2 weeks time span we saw here recently. And so I think a lot of guys sold. Now, there is a lot of corn out there yet to be bought. I think for the most part, beans, relatively speaking, are much better positioned as far as guys having those sold and out the door. You know, looking into the report, you know, right now what you're seeing is, you know, amazingly basis is holding up pretty good, you know, and considering the fact that most elevators that you know of are pretty much full, that's really an amazing thing. And so to me, I don't see a lot of strengthening with basis, especially with the weather being clear and maybe movement not being an issue as far as the weather goes. So I don't really look for basis to improve a whole lot moving forward here in the next couple, 3 weeks.
All right, then. Why don't we go ahead and get some prices from you today?
Okay, cash corn be 465, fall 456, cash beans 1382, and fall 1146.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. Have you had a chance to try this website yet? WILLAG.org. There you can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. It comes out every weekend, and in it, it's chock full of agricultural marketing advice, as well as a look at technicals and fundamentals that happen through the week. Try to gain some insight about what may happen in the weeks ahead via the marketing plan, and you can do that. You can subscribe at WILLAG.org. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with meteorologist Drew Lerner.
It's National Baked Scallops Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Orlando Jones of Middlesex, England, received a U.S. patent for a process to make starch from rice or corn. Previously, rice would be steeped in water for several weeks to separate the starch by fermentation, though with limited yield. The patent described a process to extract starch from rice, which shortened the production time, increased the yield, and left byproducts in a condition suitable for further uses. In 1929, Asa Griggs Candler died. In 1887, Candler, a wholesale druggist, purchased the formula for Coca-Cola for $2,300. Candler then spent $50,000 a year on advertising, an unheard-of amount at the turn of the century. He eventually sold the company in 1919 for $25 million. In 1831, Clement Studebaker founded a firm that one time was the world's largest producer of horse-drawn vehicles, the Studebaker Brothers Manufacturing Company in South Bend, Indiana. The company motto, always give more than you promise. In 1930, Mahatma Gandhi began his march to the coastal village of Dandi to protest the British salt monopoly. And in 1993, Christian Kent Nelson died. He was the inventor of the Eskimo pie. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Cold weather back on the way.
Yes, it is. And, you know, we had that wild little storm system that moved across a big part of the Midwest here today and still exiting out of the eastern areas. It's pumping a lot of cold air into the region. Tomorrow morning, we'll see a lot of temperatures bottoming out in the teens and 20s across the lower Midwest. We'll be even colder than that, though, in the northern areas, parts of Michigan and Wisconsin. My gosh, we'll probably get down into the positive single digits and some teens. And this is just the first of two waves of cold air that will occur. The second one comes up later in the weekend and early next week. We'll probably see the temperatures bottoming out with that one, perhaps in the positive and negative single-digit readings across parts of Wisconsin and Michigan. But the lower Midwest won't be nearly that cold. We'll probably see temperatures on Monday morning coldest, and at that point we'll probably see the readings bottoming out, mostly in the teens and 20s once again.
Here in parts of central Illinois, Drew, I'm hearing people tell me the frost line is anywhere between 4 and 6 feet deep, which begs the question, how long does it take for frost to clear once the weather gets better?
Well, the big question is when it gets better, how better is it? You know, if we're going to be in the 80s, it probably won't take too long. But if we're only in the 50s and 60s for highs and lows in the 20s and 30s, it's still going to take us a while to get rid of it. And that's what the big concern is. The one thing that will help a little bit is, of course, when we thaw the soil, we do it from the top down. So once you get several inches down into the ground, at least we'll be able to put some seed in. The problem is when that crop germinates, the root systems will not be allowed to go very deep into the soil for a while. So while we wait for that frost to come out of the ground, we're going to have a crop development that's going to be very slow. And the other issue, of course, is with the frost in the ground is we won't be able to absorb as much moisture as we would normally. And so there's a potential we may have more standing water around in some areas that are already saturated. For places like Iowa and Missouri, where it's still dry deeper in the soil, we're not going to be able to recharge some of that moisture down deep until the frost is removed. So that, too, is a little bit of a concern. We don't want to get too late into the warm season before we start putting moisture in the ground, because, you know, if we get too late into the season, we're going to start evaporation rates. It'll be so high that we won't be able to replenish like we want to.
So at this point, would it be fair to guess that the beginning of the planting season will be delayed by some day?
Yeah, I would imagine probably a good week to 10 days would probably be a fair number to use for right now. We'll go ahead and push seeds into the ground. The crop itself could actually fall further behind in its development if we do have additional surges of colder than normal weather, you know, going deeply into April and even early May. That would be a big problem.
And very quickly, precipitation chances for the Corn Belt over the next week?
We're actually going to take a little bit of a break for a little while. Only minimal amounts of moisture will come and go across the region for this next week. At the end of next week into the following weekend, there will be a chance for a larger storm system to develop once again. And that storm system we'll watch real closely. I think it's probably going to be something like the 21st through the 23rd or 24th, somewhere in that time period. We could see quite a bit of moisture come with that event. Hopefully we'll warm up for a number of days before that arrives, though.
Thank you much, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.